Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horrible Podcast. I'm Morgan Freeman.
I'm Tyler.
I'm Drew.
I'm Lona.
And thank you once again for joining us in this intrepid journey into the horror genre.
I just wonder if you're doing that to be sad. Like, is this supposed to be a sad, solemn episode?
It's a solemn episode, my.
I was going to say, hey, you guys got a minute? Can we go and talk? I think it's
much like Brad Pitt in Seven. You just stepped all over my lines. I'm just kidding. Hey, this is Brian. It wasn't Morgan Freeman, guys.
It wasn't. I do feel like we need to have
him on.
Kind of a.
I'm sure he would. I'm sure he'd be fine.
I'll reach out. Morgan at Morgan Freeman. Hey, what's up? What are you doing next week?
I would have thought this would be the episode for him because he's never been in a Wes Craven movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. We were going to do the film Turbo Kid, but some sad news in the horror world this week when we lost Wes Craven. I don't want to be like the godfather of horror or so, stuff like that, but definitely a huge, huge part of our existence when it comes to horror films.
Like I found out it was on, actually Kotaku ran a story because I was just checking video game sites on Sunday night or Monday night, I can't remember which, and it hit me in a weird place because I mean, and I tweeted about it. Like, I just sort of like sent out a flurry of tweets that, I mean, Wes Craven is sort of one half of my horror upbringing. I mean, Freddy Krueger is as important to like our generation as Dracula or Frankenstein ever were. So,
or I'd even go far as like Freddy Krueger is as important to us as like Albert Einstein is in the world. As well, and maybe even Martin Luther King,
yeah. I do.
Junior,
not senior,
not senior.
It's like Robert Downey Junior. To make sure, because senior not very important.
He made some important stuff,
like Junior,
senior too.
No, I know, but he made Junior.
Oh, he did make Junior. That's his greatest. You're my greatest creation.
I thought the same thing.
The question is Wes Craven more important than Morton Downey?
Oh, that's that is a good question. We'll delve into that later. I agree, Ty. I thought about that as well. Is that, I mean, if nothing else, I mean, and I've looked a lot at his career in the last couple of days, kind of trying to get a sense, really a full sense of him now that there's completion to it, at least. And, I mean, if nothing else, if he made no other film than Nightmare on Elm Street, which obviously he did, but if he didn't, then, I mean, he would be responsible for creating, if you want to look at it, like Jason is like our modern Frankenstein and Freddy is Dracula. I mean, these are the most important, you know, modern monsters that there are. Even over Jason, even over Michael. Michael doesn't exist as this kind of icon in the same way that yeah. they do. I mean, Freddy is so much outside of the Nightmare films themselves.
I mean, yeah. Go ahead.
And we've already done actually two episodes dealing with Wes Craven films. We've done Deadly Blessing and last Halloween we did Nightmare on Elm Street as our like summing up the big four.
I was about to ask what the second one was. I totally forgot we did Nightmare. I remember Deadly Blessing.
But also, it's like some of the greatest, especially in the 70s and the 80s, some of the creepiest and most memorable horror films ever made. I mean, Last House on the Left.
Yeah, I mean, that predates Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like, when you talk about it has one of the coolest selling points of any movie where it's, I think it, when it says, you keep telling yourself, it's only a movie, it's only a movie, it's only a movie. Like, that movie predates what Texas Chainsaw Massacre tried to do, and it's horrific and creepy, and it's kind of almost like found footage 30 years before there was found footage,
and it's a very disturbing film too. Yeah. Like in, I think it was 1972, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. 1972.
Hey, you're stepping on.
I'm sorry. Okay, you're right. So just to give everybody a kind of a synopsis of what we did Each of us picked a film and watched.
Talk about each of
a Wes Craven film that we really wanted to talk about and go through.
And the rest of us get to talk about it from our memories on it.
Right. I chose. Brian chose the People Under the Stairs,
which is fitting.
I, Claudius, chose The Serpent and the Rainbow.
I chose Shocker.
I chose Last House on the Left, but apparently Brian took it from me.
I stopped myself, and
Drew stopped you.
Drew stopped me. I was stopped. Let's not name names.
Who did it isn't important,
right? But
are we
I
sure?
was.
Are we sure about that?
I was stopped. So no. So to like kind of go over each film as to why it was important to us, and I've got some things to say about People Under the Stairs, and I'm sure everyone has their things to say about their films.
No, I don't have anything to say about mine. I wish you weren't sure about that.
And also, it will be also noted that when Lona and I came over to Drew's house tonight to eat before the podcast, we wound up being able to watch Music of the Heart by Wes Craven all the way through. So we watched that as well as a group, except for Tyler, because he moved away.
I've never seen Music of the Heart.
I hadn't either.
Yeah. I spent today watching the couple of the Cravens that I had not seen. That would be the major one was Music of the Heart, and the second one was Vampire in Brooklyn. So,
You hadn't seen Vampire in Brooklyn?
No, I just never gotten around to it. Yeah.
I don't think it's as terrible as I've only seen it the once, but I remember liking it okay.
Yeah.
But that was also when I was, I guess, 12 or 13, and so at that point I was still in the mindset of a 12 or 13 year old, and I thought, like, well, if Wes Craven's making it and Eddie Murphy's making it, like, if they're in it, it's good, which is a weird. Like, when I was a kid, I just assumed that people who made movies knew what they were doing.
When you were a child, you had childish thoughts?
Yeah.
Did you put them away when you became a grown man?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't actually moved past that 12 to 13 year old mindset, so
it's gonna be funny when your son surpasses.
He passes me. It's like, this isn't cool, Dad.
Son, I don't know how to, Jackson. I don't know how to think about this. Can you come help me think?
I thought the same thing too. Is that, and I think what we realized while watching Music of the Heart is that sometimes people just need a paycheck.
Well, which we also, I think we learned is, like Vampire in Brooklyn, it's not awful. I mean, it's nothing you're going to go back to and sit there and say, well, this is, if you're recommending Wes Craven movies to people, I'm recommending underrated Music of the Heart and Vampire in Brooklyn. That's not going to be the case, but they're not awful. Neither of them are awful. He's got some awful ones. Those are not them.
I think part two, what's weird is that
don't watch Music of the Heart, though.
Wes Craven's name became so synonymous with horror that anytime he stepped outside of it, it was sort of like saying Wes Craven's Music of the Heart just is a weird thing to say.
Wes Craven presents the music.
But, I mean, he only stepped outside of it twice with that in Paris, Je T'aime. He made one section of that, and that's pretty much the only two times he did step outside of the genre.
I don't know. Like, I think that he did a lot of interesting things that were outside of horror specifically, but were within, like, I think his range went from, like, suspense and, because I did Serpent in the Rainbow, and I don't think of it as a horror movie. I think of it kind of as a suspense flick. Like, Red Eye is not really a horror movie. It's kind of like a suspense movie.
But sure. That's where we're parsing out things, too, because, I mean, you can't find. A lot of times when I'm searching for a horror book, I can't find it because it's lumped together in, you know, suspense thriller or somewhere like that, too. So, I mean, they always get lumped together. I mean, it's almost like subgenres of a more all-encompassing genre. I don't know.
I mean, and there's definitely horror elements to, like, Serpent in the Rainbow, but ultimately it feels akin to, like, what was the movie that had Lawrence Fishburne in it that was set in Louisiana where there was, like, like a murder mystery.
Event Horizon.
I think.
Just Cause? Yeah.
I
love that game series.
I knew that was coming.
Was that Sean Connery?
Connery and Lawrence Fishburne, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it reminds me more of that kind of movie than a horror. Like, there are definitely horrific elements, but it doesn't go, like, balls out horror.
Serpent in the Rainbow also reminds me a lot of The Believers, and I think that's because
I
think they came out around the
John
same
Schlesinger.
Time, yeah.
Believers, the scene, that first scene with the mom,
oh my god, yeah, it is a horror. It is a
you'll never use the blender.
You've never seen
the same
it,
way
Tyler?
Again?
Uh-uh.
Toaster, blender, blender.
What? It was a was it a coffee machine?
I don't remember. It's a normal. I mean, you'll never use whatever household kitchen device that was.
Yeah.
The Belie- same way again.
The Believers.
Check it out. Yeah.
Yeah. If you haven't seen The Believers, Tyler, have you seen The Believers?
Okay, I recommend
you,
it. Yeah.
You guys need to see it. It is.
What is it?
It's Martin Sheen.
Dealing with a cult with like. Saint
Let's just
Sharia,
say if you've ever heard the phrase like, oh, is that a zit or a nest of baby spiders? This The Believers is where that I think the visual of that came from.
It wasn't a zit.
It wasn't a zit. Yeah, just, you know. But yeah,
it has Robert Loggia in it.
It does.
Yes,
it also
it does
has
Robert,
Jimmy Smith.
Robert Loggia.
Jimmy Smith isn't right. Yeah, Robert Loggia just as a
Harris Yulin, the judge from Ghostbusters 2.
He's also a head of the Watchers in Buffy.
Richard Mazur is in it from The Thing.
Or It.
Something.
Or It.
Yeah, he is. That's right, he is.
Yeah, no, it's I come highly recommend it. I would sit there and say that, too. If that's
definitely
something you like the genre and haven't seen, I think
cause I kind
of highly
work, of
it.
Also, as far as writing goes, that's the genre I work in. It's kind of weird voodoo detective shit.
Also
so.
Very expensive. Yeah, I tried to win the Blu-ray off of eBay, and I lost by a lot of money.
So should we go in order? Like
should
chronologically?
We do
I think so, yeah.
So let's start with Last House on the Left. Lona, take it away. Take it away, sister.
I'm in reverse chronology. No,
well, wait, ladies.
Brian, start with The Last House on the Left.
I was going to say, it can't possibly be like a ladies' first situation here.
No, it's a...
I want to know what Brian thinks about it.
Yeah, Brian, what do you think of Last House on the Left?
Sexiest movie ever.
It is. It's spicy, right?
Brian, I mean, Drew has said a line from that movie in at least 10 episodes of this podcast.
I mean, yes, if it's... Piss yourself.
It's either that or trying to sing.
It's weird that that's where Drew gets his like salacious, gross out stuff. Like, because it sounds more like something Brian would say, but Drew is the one who always like jumps in and says it.
That one, it was a monumental line in a movie, and I didn't see it till way later. But I feel like I'm stepping on Lona's toes. So.
Yes, Lona. Let's
Lona.
No.
The first Wes Craven.
Oh my
film.
God! I can't believe he's talking now.
I was introducing.
So here, let me look. I'll just do this. I watched The Last House on the Left.
Let me.
What
I got
do
this,
you guys
Lona.
Think about it?
I got this. No, I'm just kidding. Go for it.
No. It's fine.
Lona.
Yes. Is this like a trick where I start talking and then?
No, I think on a podcast, it's like the most annoying thing.
Thank you for not trying to steal my thunder, Tyler. You're the only one. I appreciate it.
You did watch the remake, though, right?
And Tyler hates single moms, so he didn't
it's
even
true.
Know me, so. I don't know what that says about you two. So I picked Last House on the Left simply because I love it. I love it so much. And the last time I watched it, was in college, and it was the movie I picked for a girls' night, which was apparently a terrible idea. So we all went to the Kroger on the east side of Athens, and we each bought two bottles of Arbor Mist wine.
If you were want to do.
And is that, you know, it was girls' night, and so, like, you know, we watched, you know, some, like, Notting Hill type thing. And then I was like, oh, my turn. I got this. It's the Last House on the Left. And they were like, is it hot? And I was like, there's a sex scene. So my one of my friends just sort of sat in stony silence through it. And then my bitchier friend got very mad at me. And kind of... We didn't really have a lot of girls' nights after that that I was invited to.
What were their what did they say?
They
during
were
the
really,
movie?
Really. They were very unsettled by the sort of juxtaposition between what was happening on the screen and the music that was playing,
awesome.
Which I love. That's like one of my favorite things about it because it's just so fucked up and weird. They were very, you know, very upset about the raping and everything, you know, that goes on there.
As people are usually are.
Well, yes, but
that's not out of the ordinary.
The raping.
But to be fair, I was coming off of a thing where like I was like I had been watching I Spit on Your Grave, which is a much more just visceral sort of rape scene than what
right.
you get
and
here.
It's just this it has there's something I don't know there's
this
something
is a more
there's a different
rape
yeah.
scene.
But there's no the movie itself has more of a message and more to say than I Spit on Your Grave does,
right? Which is just a rape based film.
Yeah,
it is.
It is poster a rape based film.
Well, that's pretty much what the one sheet for that movie actually is. If you've ever seen it,
it don't should just be called rape movie.
It should be called. It says don't want it too bad. You're getting it.
Day of the Woman. But yeah, no. So I just I watched it again just. Simply to sort of watch it in a judgment-free environment. And I still love the movie. I still love it. I know that it's incredibly, ridiculously dated. And I notice so many more things now as an adult. And, like, just, you know, so you've got, like, these 17-year-olds who are going to a concert in the bad part of town. And then they don't arrive home. But apparently in the 70s, we don't worry about that because the parents are like, we need to let them sow their wild oats, except for they're getting raped and murdered. And so it's just
up the road from them.
Literally across the street from them.
Yes.
You know, that's true. Like, and you know, and then you know,
small town.
And
it's
weird. It's
New York.
Like, there's an element of nonchalance to this movie in terms of like people being actually worried about where these children are that yeah. I didn't realize the first couple of times I watched it. And that makes it sort of, there's an element of sort of chuckles now that I get from it, but I love it. I think it stands up.
David Hess's Krug is terrifying and weirdly charming at the same time,
right.
too. Like
he's like, you're like, I kind of like him. I might do you, but you're kind of a dick, but I might do you.
Well, as far as like the artistry of the film, like I remember watching it. And I didn't watch it until college. Like, I didn't watch it in high school because I wasn't interested in that kind of movie. Like, in high school, I was more into, like, monster slasher movies. And so I started delving into, like, I kind of went through a phase that you did where I sort of wanted to watch all these sort of 70s exploitation movies. So I watched I Spit on Your Grave and a lot, like, the women in prison movies. And so Last House on the Left is naturally kind of an extension of that or sort of one of the first. And I remember being really uncomfortable. I don't think I liked it, but I was really uncomfortable. So it did its job. Like, it did what it was supposed to do. Like, watching it now, what do you think of how the film was put together and made and, like, done as a movie as opposed to just sort of an experience? Do you have anything that you want to say about that?
I still love it. I do. Like, I, you know, it's dated, but lots of things. I'm dated as well. I think it is one of those movies that it just sticks with you. And I think you just, there's an element of it that I don't really know exactly how to explain it, but there's an element to the movie that seems very real. The way it's filmed, it just seems like you're sort of in the woods with them, which I think is what makes it so unsettling.
Is that called cinema verite, or is that only in...
I don't know the proper term.
Is that cinema verite, Drew?
It doesn't have to be just documentarian, no. I mean, it could be.
Sure.
My experience with Last House on the Left was I had an uncle who convinced me that it was real and showed it to me when I was 11 years old.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And
that's the cool uncle, guys. That's the cool uncle.
It was my dad's twin brother. And
did he trick you and did he make you think it was your dad?
No.
Did you sit on his lap while you watched it?
They were not identical twins.
That would have made the story really awesome, though. If it's like,
hey, Brian, I'm back home from work. Let's watch this crazy movie. No, but he had convinced me. And I remember, my grandmother lived in this really shitty town in Virginia called Ivor, and it was away from all of civilization that I knew. It felt like it took us 3 hours to get there, but it was like 45 minutes away just because we didn't pass anything on the way there. And I remember being there, and it wasn't even a laser disc. It was like this weird cartridge disc system that he put it in. It was like, you know, it would flip itself like ka-chunk, ka-chunk. No, but it was like a huge, like a record-sized thing. I remember him showing this to us. And
it wasn't Laserdisc?
It wasn't Laserdisc. It was before Laserdisc. But they had quite a few of them. I don't know. Like I said, it was in this weird podunk
tent. Pulled the film out of VHS tapes and put them on something else.
No. It was weird. It had a cover and all this stuff. I remember he also had the, who's the guy from the Monkees? I think it's Mike Nesmith had this show called Elephant Parts, that like comedy, bunch of comedy stuff. They had that. He had a movie called Super Fuzz on this system. It was very, anyway, this was, I guess, of course, 1962. but I remember being shown that, and then I remember being in this town for like a week with my grandmother.
Is this CED, a capacitance electronic disc?
Maybe that's what it was. I hadn't seen anything like that.
It's something I pulled up. Then. It used a needle to read the information from the disc?
It very well could have, but it was in a cartridge, and you shoved the cartridge, like an 8-track almost. That's it. Okay. Yes.
That's a CED.
Okay.
CED. Learn something on the Horrible Podcast.
So we had it on that, and I watched it, and I just remember being like, going, "This is real?" And of course, this is on a shitty, CRT television in the middle of this podunk town
with a tremendous technology you're using right then.
Right, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, as I'm watching, I'm like, this is real. I am watching people be killed and raped. Of course, then he raped me, but you know. Regardless.
And that's why he's your favorite uncle.
Diddle
he's
about.
He's dead
diddle
now.
Diddle about.
Fiddle about.
That's true.
That's what he says in the
song.
But no, he's dead. That experience, I think that led to my experience, like my overall experience the first time I watched Last House on the Left as truly a horrific film. And then I didn't realize until later after watching Nightmare on Elm Street, and Last House on the The Hills Have Eyes, that it was the same director, and that's what I think.
When did you realize it was Wes Craven? Did you have any concept of Wes Craven at that time?
I didn't, and of course there was no internet, so I couldn't figure it out. But I think I finally put two and two together after watching Nightmare on Elm Street renting something from a video store and seeing Last House on the Left for the only other time in my life, other than when my uncle had showed it to me, and be like, oh, okay, this isn't real. I can go to sleep now.
I went through, like, when I was a kid, I did know who Wes Craven was, but only because I had seen Nightmare so many times that I was used to seeing, like, his name on the movie.
Right.
And so, like, when anything came out that was Wes Craven, I just naturally thought it would be, like, or kind of we talked about it earlier in the podcast, I just thought that there were these people who were just kind of anointed to make horror things. Like Stephen King, if he makes it, then it's horrific and scary and good. And I thought the same thing about Wes Craven. So everything I watched, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing cinema. This is such a great movie because Wes Craven made it. And that's not true. There's a part of me that like I owe a lot of my love for horror movies to Wes Craven, but I also think that he made would we say major missteps? Like, if we were going to lay at his feet, like, what were some of his missteps as a director? Or should we do that?
I think we should hold that. I think we should go through all the things you had to talk about, and then we can talk about him kind of overall. Because those are things I'd like to talk about, too, and I think that would be a good thing to come back to.
So after Last House on the Left, what's next?
I didn't see anything.
Oh, so...
Drew, what did you think of it? That's
okay. I mean, I can quickly do it because obviously...
Just say piss yourself.
Like I know. That. Obviously, I've seen it because I'm pretty sure the first time I saw it was in college as well, and it was at the last house on the left. Do you remember the house I lived in?
Yes.
Right, it was the last house on the left on the street, on a dead-end street as well, which had its own creepiness to it. And just remember thinking how visceral and gut-wrenching it was, but also how... While its rawness was probably a positive for the movie itself, it's not particularly well made. It shows a guy who's come from, his degree is in English, and we're talking about, he wasn't a filmmaker. He wasn't coming from USC, he wasn't coming from UCLA, he wasn't one of the, Craven wasn't one of, isn't Carpenter in that sense. He's not coming from that film school background, and it shows in some of these early films like this, but I think it's a testament to what he's able to do that Last House on the Left is still so successful, despite the fact that it's it's really, it can be hard to watch, as at least, you know, from a, you know, a cinematic standpoint that way.
Wasn't he also a Quaker growing up, or like really religious in some way?
Something like that. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Is that where Deadly Blessing pulls from?
He also made porn prior to this too.
I had a friend on Facebook comment about how his dad was a bodybuilder in the 70s and stumbled upon Wes Craven and the other guy who produced the movie.
Cunningham.
Yeah, Sean Cunningham.
He's the Friday the 13th guy.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't see anything about a Quaker in this.
They were like at Venice Beach filming some B-roll for a porno film to try to raise money to do Last House and Left. Yep. They interviewed his dad for the film because his dad was a bodybuilder. But and how, you know, I guess his dad was telling him after he learned he Wes Craven had died about how he had met him and how he was a genuinely nice guy, just trying to make ends meet and also trying to make money to make his own film. Yeah. Because like I said, he didn't have an iPhone. He had to go out and buy a camera and stock and all that kind of stuff to make this film.
Yeah. He had a strict Baptist upbringing.
Okay.
So I get it.
Yeah. Even in things like The Hills Have Eyes, you can see just sort of how maybe like not uncultured, I can't find the word, but just sort of like how much of a neophyte he was to the genre, like just a newbie to it all.
But he had made big steps by then. It's leagues ahead of Last House on the Left.
I mean, but like I still, maybe even that movie doesn't need polish. When you think about it doesn't need a polish. It doesn't. It's almost more horrifying. And I know, I think you would agree with that, Drew. Like, more horrifying because it's less polished. It looks more like a snuff film than if John Carpenter had made it.
So yeah, there's no steady. I mean, we're not talking about steady cam shots. Yeah. There's not Dean Cundey around the corner, you know, making everything look pretty.
But it's also still kind of sophomoric looking at the same time. Like, I agree with you that it's still sophomoric looking as far as like how the film is made, but there is just that sort of like visceral in your faceness to it that is hard to escape. And like, I was completely unsettled by it. Like, I came out thinking like, I don't like that. That made me
Which is what you should leave a good exploitation film feeling like. Like, that's the thing. Like, I mean, I'm not saying you can't enjoy them, because
so, like,
I know people
like,
do.
Fucked up is what you're saying.
No, I like it. I watch it. I watch it several times. I like to leave them unsettled, because that's what I'm kind of going to look for, and that's what I'm watching for, is to find the most extreme version of whatever it is, the story that they're telling, and I want to be disturbed by it because I want to see that it actually still affects me in some way. Because the ones I don't find affecting are the ones that I watch. I'm like, oh, all right, I've seen that before. But the fact with Last House Left is it has stuck with us because it does have something. I mean, I'm not saying you can't enjoy it. I enjoyed it. I mean, I'm not saying they're saying that. Although you're going to be dating a different kind of dude after this podcast, though.
I would like to date any dude. Really? Like,
I think
a date would be nice.
Wait, I think we've seen this. I think this is the beginning of a horror movie right
it's
here.
It's called Audition.
All right, so we go from The Last House on the Left. He makes The Hills Have Eyes, Deadly Blessing, Swamp Thing.
Oh, you're missing all those TV movies.
All right,
I'll go through
all of it. Last House on the Left, then goes The Fireworks Woman, The Hills Have Eyes, Stranger in Our House, Deadly Blessing, Swamp Thing, Invitation
to
Hell.
Which I just watched Invitation to Hell today.
Yeah. The Hills Have... You want to go into Swamp Thing?
No, because we didn't really watch it. I loved that movie growing up, though. I think Adrian Barbeau was one of my early crushes.
Oh, my God.
That's like the 6 degrees of separation right there with Carpenter and Craven.
Yeah, I had never wanted to see boobs more in my life than Adrian Barbeau and Swamp Thing.
Do you know they released like they mistakenly released some R-rated version of it a few years ago on one of the DVD releases, and it does have the nude scene that's supposed to be in there, but they've since figured out that mistake, and it's really hard to find, but they did accidentally release it.
But yeah, she was something special in that movie. Yeah. That was the first Scream Factory DVD I ever bought, was The Swamp Thing.
That's a good call.
Invitation to Hell, The Hills Have Eyes.
Worst movie you made.
The Hills Have Eyes, Part 2.
Worst movie you made.
What is?
The Invitation to Hell.
No.
Or The Hills Have Eyes, Part 2.
Hills Have Eyes, Part 2. It's terrible.
And then in 1984, he makes his masterpiece, A Nightmare on Elm Street.
No, Chiller.
then Chiller, then Twilight, some Twilight Zone episodes, Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color. We get Deadly Friend. And then
underrated. Love it.
And then is that the one with Chrissy Swanson?
Yes, it is. And BB, the robot.
Yes.
Absolutely. I'm so disappointed that no one chose that. I knew I could have as well, but I had something I had already lined up with because I just wanted to talk about Deadly Friend.
You were disappointed in us and yourself.
No, just disappointed that no one chose it.
And then in 1988, we get The Serpent and the Rainbow, Tyler.
Yeah. So as far as like Craven movies that I think now are underrated, I think that movie did okay, but not really well. And I think it's because it's tantamount to being a horror movie, but it's not quite. And I think I remember loving it growing up because I thought it's such a weird, fucked up movie when I was a kid. And I think that movie still holds up, but it's kind of creaky in the joints.
Just like me when I wake up in the morning.
I think it doesn't particularly hold up well, but it's a really interesting movie. It's about a guy, Bill Paxton. Bill Paxton.
Pullman.
Which I actually did say the other night when I was like telling Kate about it. No, Bill Pullman works for like a pharmaceutical company and sort of gets into Haitian voodoo. That's kind of the premise of it is he wants to find some sort of thing that he can market. And it's very apropos to the 80s and sort of the greed culture, kind of like They Live. And he just gets pulled into this world of Haitian voodoo and underground Haitian gangsters and stuff. And it's a really interesting movie. It's not really a horror movie. I kind of wish that there were more, there's a moment in the movie where an ostensible zombie walks up to him, holding the hand of a miniature, a person who's dead in a wedding dress, and he opens the wedding dress, and it's a dead zombie person that rips its mouth open.
Yes,
that's more of what I wanted to see out of the movie, but that stuff is more, it's fewer and far-er betweener than I want, but it's not I don't think it's a bad movie. I think that I watched it several years ago and hated it. Was like, oh my God, I can't believe I liked it as a kid. But watching it this week, I actually have a much deeper appreciation for that film than I did as a kid, than I did several years ago.
My memories of it are that it's not what you expect it to be, but I think the thing is it's based on a nonfiction book, and so it comes across as a movie purporting to be about something that really happened. And we've seen a lot of horror films that are trying to pull that sort of, that sort of feat off and make us believe that this really happened kind of deal. I do remember, I just think it's such a great, it does such a great job of making something that is made cartoonish a lot of times, like the whole voodoo Haitian zombie idea of it, something that's made to be so silly a lot of times. I think it does a really good job of making it seem like it is something that is real and could be real. I think it suffers from what some of his movies we're going to discuss over the course of this. I just think it's not very exciting at times.
It really isn't. Yeah. It's really just, and I think that's my biggest criticism of Craven as a whole, is that he's not able to create tension in a film. Like watching the sort of penultimate scenes leading up to the ending of Serpent the Rainbow, I didn't feel any sense of tension. I didn't feel any sense of urgency to what was happening. It's almost as though, and I think Nightmare even suffers from this. It feels like a series of scenes that are put together, but are not cohesive enough to make a really tense film.
My experience with Serpent in the Rainbow was I was 11 years old, and my uncle had this. No, I'm just kidding.
It's a different uncle.
Yeah, it's my mom.
Another twin brother.
This
your
is
dad.
My mom's side. My mom's side.
Your mom's twin brother.
The
on your dad's side.
I remember watching it, and I remember the preview creeping me out because of the line, "Don't bury me, I'm not dead." That was the big one with his the white face and which is the cover of the.
Yeah, I love that. I love the cover of that movie.
It's a great. It's one of those great walking down the aisles of the video store boxes. Yeah.
It really was. It's a great title too.
Just kind of stepping back for a second. The when we talked about Faces of Death last week, I realized the cover for Faces of Death 2 was the one that always caught me. It was the red box with the white skeleton surgeon on the front of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
When I was looking for the cover. Anyway.
Because some are pretty not exciting.
No. And then I found that it was also the ripoff Death Faces.
That, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, no, the... It's
on the nose as far as titles go.
I was... I remember trying to find the Serpent and the Rainbow score years ago. I may have mentioned this on the podcast before.
Brad Fiedel.
Yeah. It was, for the longest... Before digital came along... The most expensive movie score you could buy. They were going for like $300 and $400. I didn't buy it at that time. I was like, well, this is just not going to be a movie score I can get my hands on. But then, of course, digital came, and I was like, I can get my hands on everything. But no, I just remember it being very expensive, and I wanted it for the longest time, but I just couldn't afford it. Obviously, I'm not going to pay $300 for a CD.
But maybe a CED
or a vinyl, maybe. Because, you know, man, you can totally hear those.
You can hear the zombies in the vinyl. Yeah.
Another criticism of the movie, I think, is that, like, while it sort of ensconces itself in the sort of, like, milieu of Haitian culture, I don't feel like it's embedded enough to be, like, fully interesting. It still feels, like, at arm's length from what makes the movie interesting. Like, I don't know. There's something about it that still, it doesn't... feel authentic. I mean, it feels authentic, and like it's definitely, I think Craven, to his credit, takes a lot of chances as a filmmaker. Even if they don't succeed, like he took a lot of chances with his movies. This was definitely not a paycheck. Like I definitely think he put a lot of himself into this movie, and I don't think all of it's successful, but I think it. I mean, it's a damn good movie. I think overall.
My memories of it, like I said, are not negative, but just focus on the negatives. But I feel like in the long run of looking at a list of his movies, it's one of the more worthwhile entries.
I think so too. Like it's what makes me angry about the genre as a whole is that like people don't entirely take chances with subject matter. Like it's always like sometimes it's just the cheapest joke. Like how gross can we make the cheapest joke? Which I love. Like I think there's definitely room for that, and I love those kinds of movies. But I also want to see something that's like thought provoking and weird and different. And I wish more filmmakers would take a chance. As another movie where a couple goes to a cabin and shit happens. Like how. Let's do something else with that. I think that's why, like, I don't want to get off topic. That's why I like this movie is that, I mean, this takes a huge chance. And I think, I mean, even, like, what Brian's going to speak to with People Under the Stairs, like, that movie takes a lot of chances, too.
It's more boring.
We'll get to that.
Boring. Lona, what is your background with Serpent in the Rainbow?
Yeah, I just have to own it. So I was at theater time in like 1998, and I liked the cover, and I rented it, and I went home, and I watched like 30 minutes and fell asleep.
Oh, so you're...
So I've only seen like...
Your experience
so you
then...
You should have picked that movie and watched it then.
Your experience then was like my experience
now. No, because
what
if I had fallen asleep... In the first 30 minutes again this time.
Well, that would have proved something.
I've been like, it's about some voodoo. And then
this movie will...
But I mean, I will say, like, I had, like, a slight crush on Bill Pullman then. So, you know, like, I do remember being like, he's kind of all right, dead asleep.
He's the president.
This movie will guarantee to turn you into a zombie.
Apparently.
I mean, like, Bill Pullman does a great job in the movie, too. I mean, it reminds me... It's definitely a literary movie in that it's kind of Heart of Darkness. You know, it's this guy who goes in and just does.
Maybe that's why I fell asleep because
you didn't like Heart of Darkness.
It was literary and it was just too.
You're like,
for
enough.
Me.
She doesn't like Conrad.
You're just calling me dumb. I get it, Tyler.
No, I just thought maybe.
No,
just
it's fine. It's fine. You're fine.
Thought maybe you didn't like Joseph Conrad.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
So I mean,
what about
I think
Lord
that,
Jim.
I think like what would have helped the movie was more of a sense of urgency about like
anything
the underground Haitian stuff. Like I feel like he didn't feel as in danger as I wanted him to until like the last 20 minutes, and then he's just like stumbling around as a zombie, and I love that. Like
that's
I remember.
I think that's what I remember most about this movie is the stumbling around as a zombie,
which pretty much describes Bill Pullman in a lot of other movies.
his acting chops are. I'm just gonna stumble around like a zombie. All right, Bill.
We've done a Bill Pullman movie. We've done the only Pullman Paxton.
Mm-hmm.
Which
mm-hmm.
one was that? It was
the Brain Dead. Brain Dead. Just some title like that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Then after Serpent the Rainbow, we immediately go into 1989's Shocker, the Dane Cook movie about the two in the pink and one in the stink.
That's not the one I watched. Oh. Is that what I was supposed to watch?
Yes.
That's not the Wes Craven version. Remembering
well,
the wrong
Wes Craven film. Made a documentary about Dane Cook.
I'm sorry. I am getting my references confused. Dane Cook does the double middle finger. I was thinking of. Yeah. I've seen the double middle finger on the back of people's cars, and I've also seen the Shocker sticker on people's cars. My apologies to Dane Cook.
That's the last time you'll hear that on here.
Hopefully.
So I, despite its flaws, I think I'd still pick the best one of the bunch, other than Lona. But Lona went with A-list, I feel, whereas the rest of them, we dug a little deeper, and so that was
she really did cop out. She's like, yeah. I'm gonna choose the easy.
It's like oh, I'm gonna do Nightmare.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm gonna watch something I'm going to enjoy. That's really fucking stupid.
Well, I've been really wanting to rewatch.
Look, I watched all the fucking Wishmasters last year. Okay, so fuck all of
you. You could have watched anything. You could have watched his worst movie.
I have already done
you should have
that
done My Soul to Take.
I watched. You made me fucking watch Music of the Heart, Drew.
Mom and Dad.
You could have chosen that.
It's look. I hate you all.
Shocker opens like Nightmare on Elm Street, though. Like, Horace Bing. I mean, here's the thing. The worst thing about Shocker is it smells of Wes Craven's desperation to launch a new franchise so badly. I mean, that's really, I mean, it's Horace Pinker, which is, by the way, a great name for a movie killer.
Especially the last name Pinker, and you've made a movie called The Shocker.
Shocker, yeah. But it's like, you got Mitch Pileggi, you got this, you know, he has this limp, he's large, he's threatening, he has this great name, and for some reason, Peter Berg is a college quarterback who can see him in dreams. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a second, I've already seen this. I mean, the whole opening is Pinker actually like building stuff out of his TVs, which is a lot like the Nightmare. Except you do have Dudes of Wrath, which is a Paul Stanley-led band opening it. I mean, and just that's the thing. As it goes on, it's got a lot of stuff that works really well. It has a great energy. It's so fast-paced. Like, the one thing I can't say about it, which I would discredit several of his movies with, is, I mean, the pacing, they can get slow and a little boring. And Shocker doesn't have that.
Do you think it's his 1980s Red Eye?
No, because Red Eye is still better, because still the thing is, Shocker falls so victim to the faults of late 80s horror. Though. I mean, that's the thing. It can't overcome the fact that it's trying to be a new Nightmare. Pun slightly intended there, at least. It's trying to be a new Nightmare, but in a time period where it's trying to compete with 4 and 5. And so it's that type of movie. It's just, I mean, it has effects. It has these television effects and these electrical effects that maybe looked good in 89, but don't look good now.
I think that's part of, like, all movies that come out around this time just have that fault, where it's like movies of this era just don't look good.
Yeah, no, it's not pretty. It does look like a late run Nightmare. I mean, it's just, but it's so action paced. Like, the first act is crazy. Like, the whole first act is Pinker's still alive, and Peter Berg is a foster kid with a dad who's a cop. And he convinces his dad that he's a cop to let him go and help him capture him based on his dreams. And then they finally do capture him after he kills like 8 more people. And then you get the second act, which starts with, this is the thing I think, maybe one of the best parts about it is, they literally capture him and they put him on trial and they convict him and they execute him within the whatever small span of time in the movie occurs. Like, it's, and this is, a lot of this is based on the fact that the evidence comes from Peter Berg's dreams, by the way. I mean, that's still one of the major keys to this. It's like, it's insane how fast it happens. And then you get this weird Ghost of the Machine type plot where then all of a sudden he's possessing people through electricity because he has a deal with the devil. And
got a deal too much. With the devil.
It's just he has all these ideas going there, and you just see he's just trying so hard to create this is going to be it, guys. This is the new Jason. This is the new Freddy. We're going to have
it. Do you think it better if it had started with the execution?
I don't know. I don't know. It's a nice setup. I mean, the first scenes work pretty well, although they do have, like, this first dream sequence, I mean, plays so nightmare. It's just really hard. I think it's a guy trying to recapture the bottle that, you know, the lightning in a bottle that he had with Freddy, and that's the problem with it. Like, if some other guy had made this, it was, oh, this is a nightmare knockoff, but I think it would have been okay. But it's the fact that it's Wes Craven trying to do it, and it just has that desperation of, I want another franchise. This is going to be it. I think it's pretty influential later on. I mean, Final Friday, I think, pretty much rips it off. And this book I just read a little while back called Husks, I think it's kind of this idea too. It's got a weird, it's got ghosts in it though. Like, his girlfriend is murdered and she shows up as a ghost throughout. Like, I still remember the scene that I remember the most before I watched it again. This is like this Lady in the Lake scene where he has to go get a necklace that
aquatic winches passing out cutlery is no way to govern it.
Yeah. Yes. It's so strange. It's like trying to be Max Headroom at this point. There's just so much going on. It's just so late 80s.
It just sounds like too much of a movie that it needed to, like, pare down.
It also
it's an hour and 50 minutes.
The way you're describing it also makes me feel like this was written in a coke-induced rage.
It might have been at that point in time, though. And I mean,
I'm sure it was. Like, everybody's like, hey, Wes, we're gonna have the Crunch franchise.
You know what would be a good idea? You know what this movie needs?
I just figured.
It's not just that he's a serial killer. It's he can go into people's dreams. That's your thing, right? Yeah, like, it's too much. And I remember, like, as a kid, I really liked it. Like, I rented it. I was like,
it's,
oh man,
fun.
That was a fucking movie.
It's fun. I mean, it still has that.
Wasn't there a metal band? Is that the Paul Stanley song?
Dudes of Wrath. There's several. It's got a pretty strong soundtrack. It's got Megadeth covering No More Mr. Nice
That's
Guy.
That's what it was. Yes, yeah. I do remember that. Yes, I remember the video for that.
Yeah, but it's Paul Stanley and Desmond Child fronting Dudes of Wrath, and they do a song called Shocker. It's the theme song.
You got two in the pink and one in the stink. It's a shocker.
Isn't that just Steel Panther now?
Yes, it is actually Steel Panther.
I mean, yeah.
John Tesh is the newsman, by the way.
Yeah, he is. John Tesh is in that movie. I just think, like, so many movies use this trope, though. Like, how was this something that was used a lot before this movie?
What?
Like, the possessing other people?
I think we had the whole
spate of, like, remember what was a Jeff Fahey movie where he got, like,
Body Parts, which is a great, if we ever want to delve into somebody else who is underrated, though, is Eric Red. Who's the filmmaker behind that? And Body Parts is actually pretty good.
Body Parts is good.
No, but I mean, this leads to, like, the movie. Like, the thing about Shocker is always, there are several movies that came out, like Fallen.
I think Fallen's better.
But I mean, I have a hard time saying that because it comes afterwards and it pretty much just feels like.
Apes it.
I mean, Ghost of the Machine is essentially this.
Yeah.
I mean, there's several
Ghost
things.
Ghost of the Machine, too.
Yeah. There's several things that come later. So I guess it's just a testament maybe to Craven.
I think Brain Scan's also kind of this movie, except it's just video games instead of, right? Like, isn't that Brain Scan where the killer's in? I mean, even Lawnmower Man is kind of like this a little bit. Like, the plot of Lawnmower Man, that's totally not a Stephen King thing,
right? So, I mean, but it's fun. I mean, it's. I mean, that's the thing. I think out of all the movies of his I've watched recently, Shocker is the most entertaining, but it also it's just way too ambitious and just ultimately just doesn't work. I would have liked to have seen at least get a sequel to see where that goes, because he has the idea of a new franchise. Like, making this with the idea of a franchise, like, where do you see this going?
I'm shocked, like, to hear you say that.
Even Child's Play is this movie. Did Child's Play come before this?
That's 87, isn't it?
I think so.
I think Child's Play is 87.
It's like the same exact idea. Serial killer puts its soul into a thing.
It came out. Child's Play came out the year before. Oh, they were all sorts of people doing coke.
And they're all doing it at the same clubs together in L.A. Totally. And then all the horror guys are around just writing the same script and changing names.
Yeah, they were at the same table doing. They were on the same glass surface.
The same hooker's ass.
I got to read. gross.
I said ass.
The other night, I got a weird hankering to watch the My Buddy commercial. Do you remember the?
Oh yeah. And Kid Sister.
My buddy,
my buddy. Wherever I go, he goes.
Kid Sister, no.
Kid Sister,
it's the same thing.
Yeah. I know, but
Kid Sister and me.
I had to explain to Jackson once he somehow Child's Play entered his line of sight, and I was explaining to him how it was it was based on a real toy called My Buddy, and I showed him the stuff, and he's like, "That's weird." I was like, "Yeah, it is weird." It's super strange. Okay, so then after we get Shocker, we get into a TV movie, Night Visions.
Did anybody else watch Shocker at all?
I don't really watch the Shocker.
Yeah, I watched it as a kid.
And then, all right, I'm sorry.
I watched it,
Tyler,
as a kid.
Cut.
And it.
You there, Tyler?
Wait, is he there?
That's why I kind of was like.
It's like. Oh my god! If we pull it up and he's, what movie will he be in now, other than Unfriended? God damn! Is that going to be the movie? He said he lost you. Yeah. I don't know why I said that. No. Is everything just going to be Unfriended from now on? Which is really annoying. Is that movie going to become that?
The next Unfriended.
Important in that sense that anytime like we're doing something technologically based,
it's Unfriended.
Yeah,
or the Den, which was what Unfriended was.
Yeah, but Unfriended's going to be the movie that gets remembered, not the Den though, because they are too different too.
They were different.
What about Open Window with
Sasha Grey? I like the Den better. I think Unfriended gimmickly. As it does it better.
Yeah. Why didn't they call it Unfriended?
I like Unfriended use of technology.
Yeah, I hated that.
Actual technology.
That it was a ghost. I didn't like. The whole what was going on in the Den. I think was stronger.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the use of technology is better in Unfriended.
It should have been Unfriended.
I think the one thing that Unfriended did really well was hold its gimmick throughout.
Yeah.
It never showed, you know, it never showed the wheel spinning. I thought trying to get. Yeah. You know, why are we still doing this like this? It just that part kind of worked.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting on that to go to Netflix instead.
Yeah. I mean, I it should be soon enough. And, you know, I think it's worth watching. I certainly don't.
Yeah, it's totally worth an at-home watch. Yeah.
So we're done with Shocker?
Well, I mean, sure.
Go ahead. Tell us about your Shocker
story. I don't really have a Shocker. I watched Shocking. It. I was young. You motherfucker.
He wants to make a joke worse than that, though, so be glad.
No, I
do. I do want to make horrible
jokes. I watched it on a date with a boy, and he said, I could shock you. And I said, go ahead and try.
That's what he wanted.
I know.
And he goes, I want to shock you. And you're like, go ahead. And he's like, I would like to have a committed relationship.
And I was like, really? And he said, no.
No, I just want to actually put two fingers in the pink and one in the stink.
You had to get there.
No, I mean, that's actually exactly what happened.
It's not really.
She just thinks that you're spying on her.
No, I mean, like, it's really weird that you were there when I was, like, in eighth grade.
I wanted to know what was going to happen in Shocker 2.
I cried.
That would be great. Oh, my God. How
it
awesome.
Actually, Shocker 2 is reverse Shocker, where the fingers are a little bit.
How awesome would it be if you made Shocker 2, but it had nothing to do with Shocker 1, and it was all about, like,
the Shocker.
No,
people being shocked by relationship goals that are fulfilled.
I hope Tom Six never listens to our podcast because I think we just gave him his second franchise as Shocker. He's going to steal the term Shocker and make an entire movie about
50 fingers in the pink and 80 fingers in the stink.
Well, that's Shocker 3.
Hang on now.
That's Shocker 3.
I've seen that video. It's pretty rough. All right. People Under the Stairs. My jam.
I'm sorry.
Hated it.
Yeah. Had you seen it before?
Oh, yeah. I saw it in the theater.
I
saw it in the theater, and I was so excited because, you know, of course, Wes Craven. I'm sure it even said at the preview, like, from the mind of Wes Craven,
right,
the creator of Nightmare on Elm Street, The Hills Have Eyes. But no, so I remember really enjoying the beginning, and even watching it again the last couple nights ago, I watched it, and I enjoyed the beginning and then completely lost interest the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
It is a very, very boring film.
Very boring.
It's very boring.
It's a really boring movie.
Like,
it's got so many great ideas, and it's so genuine and earnest in its discussion of homelessness, and that's part of the problem.
Oh God, yeah, such a like even it's such a yeah a commentary on like people being evicted and these rich people throwing them out so they can make you know better condominiums. Also played the two owners of the home are the two main older characters were also husband and wife in Twin Peaks.
Yeah,
Everett McGill and I can't remember her name, but played and arguably the best characters in the film. Those two, the mom and the dad, mother and father, Wendy Roby, completely like just
the gimp outfit.
Yeah, like all of a sudden he puts on a leather gimp outfit to chase these
children
through a wall, and it makes no sense why he puts it on.
No,
and Ving Rhames in it, and of course he's like
he has the meats.
He was like,
which is such a weird ad. Campaign.
So when the kid Fool, who was also later in The Sandlot, goes, you know, we're gonna kick down. Fuck homelessness. You feel that pride tugging at you? Or you feel that tugging at you? That's pride. Fuck pride.
Not a bad Ving Rhames.
You gotta go out and sling that rock.
I think that's better than your Morgan Freeman.
Okay.
Your Ving Rhames might be superior to your Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
Your mama's got cancer that can get rid of, but she ain't got no money.
He lost a little bit on that.
All right, okay. I flew too close to the sun on that
short bursts.
Yeah. So Ving Rhames in it.
AJ Langer, who is in My So-Called Life.
My So-Called Life, who was still very. Was this priest of My So-Called Life?
Yes.
Okay. Because I remember seeing her in My So-Called Life. You're right, because I remember seeing her in My So-Called Life and going, hey, look, it's the girl from People Under the Stairs.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Also, one of the oddest-looking people ever, Sean Whalen.
Yeah.
Who is, you may know from Twister. He's also in, well, you probably know from Twister. not a very attractive man. Also, he was 27 in this movie. He's supposed to be 17, playing a 17-year-old.
He was in that thing you do, Never Been Kissed, Idle Hands.
He's been in a lot of stuff. He was in a lot
Batman
of commercials
Returns?
In the late 90s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think he's also in...
If you saw a picture of him, you guys would know who we're talking about.
He's also... I think he's also in Cable Guy as the... When they're doing the karaoke. And he's one of the guys that just mouths like, yeah, yeah, as a... Jim Carrey
is. He actually is. He's at in the karaoke scene of Cable Guy.
That's yes. Doing the white, want somebody to love. So
I think he's one of the, is he one of the journalists or is he a high school student and Never Been Kissed?
He has to be a journalist because there's no way.
He's like 40 by that point.
Yeah. So.
I don't remember that movie.
I don't. And I've
having
I,
never seen
I watched. I watched People Under the Stairs. A few days, or it may have been less than it may have been less than 48 hours. I can't remember if I was Monday or Tuesday night I watched it, but I still don't remember what happens in the middle of that movie.
It's so boring. Like once they get in the house, like leading up to the house, in the house, like it's just such a boring. And that's really all I remember is them getting into a house.
I just remember it making me feel like an asshole for thinking it's boring, though. And
because you want to like it.
Well, not only that, but like I said, he's trying more than he likes his messages. And he definitely came out of a social, revolutionary kind of mindset. Craven did. Wants to have, their messages there. And this one has his most, on the nose message yet. And it's about homelessness. And
fuck
homelessness. And you want to feel good about it and be like behind it, and then you're just like, this is just not, scary. It's not really interesting.
The solution to homelessness is to cage people in your basement.
Right. Well, that does solve it, but that's not the solution.
We gave them a home.
So actually, this goes against one of my theories: is that his better movies are the ones that he wrote, or his worst movies, the ones he didn't write. Although I still wouldn't put People on the Stairs as one of his worst movies.
No.
Did he write Hills Have Eyes 2?
Hills Have Eyes 2, I'd have to check.
Oh, you mean also?
Yes,
or
he did.
Part 2?
Yes, he did. But Hills Have Eyes 2 was just a cash grab kind of deal. It has a flashback from the POV of a dog, and it's worth not discussing. No, there you go. But he did write it, yes.
But then after People Under the Stairs, he did nothing else. So Wes Craven's career ended with People Under the Stairs. We're going to go ahead and end it there. Thanks for listening.
I think the most amazing thing about his career is to look and sit there and say, you'd think at this point, most everybody's career is going downhill. As many as movies as he's made and what he's done, it's like he's starting to make these, you know, passion projects and all. Then he probably makes his best film.
New Nightmare?
Yes.
Yes. New Nightmare came back in such a... It was such a strong return for Freddy Krueger that it was, I think, unlike anything I had ever seen as far as horror franchises go.
I mean, it still suffers from some of the things we talked about. It gets slow at parts.
Sure, it does.
I still love that movie.
Yeah,
unabashedly.
It is his best film, and I say that there's an asterisk that I like to put around that.
He wrote it and directed it.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about Scream.
And that's the thing.
That's his disclaimer, is that he did not write Scream.
Yeah. And I'm glad because I was like, are they joking?
Yeah. I think Scream is so much. I mean, and this is just the wannabe screenwriter side of me coming out and things like that. I think Scream is so much Kevin Williamson's movie that Wes Craven does a fantastic job bringing to life. But that, I mean, it's not like Nightmare's his movie. Nightmare's Wes Craven's movie. It's his idea. It's all that. And Scream is him taking someone else's ideas and doing a great job with it. And that's what, you know, a good director does.
Yeah.
But I always think more of Kevin Williamson. Whenever I hear, you know, whenever Scream is described as, you know, something Wes Craven, I just always think of Kevin Williamson more than any of that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just think it's such head and shoulders above everything else, though.
Yeah. Oh, it is. I mean, I don't deny that. Yeah, that's his highest grossing film. Like he comes to his highest grossing film at that point. It barely outgrossed Scream 2, though.
Scream,
which is funny.
And Scream, almost 20 years old. It's 19
yeah,
years old,
which is why we just
nowadays,
got the TV show.
Yeah. If you watch it again nowadays, the clothing, you really are reminded that it's 20 years.
How
I, today? Okay, so today I went to Target to buy new Metal Gear, and there was a woman.
You mean some clothes
with a baby
for a clothes for around. A concert?
Yeah, you bought some Metal Gear.
A Metal
yeah.
Gear for
sweet
some clothes.
Metal Gear for my upcoming activities.
So the at Target, I saw someone wearing a pair of floral, shorts, overalls, like kind of overalls, but not like floral print, pink floral print. And she was like a stylish person, and this is what she was wearing. It was such a bizarre moment because I thought, Christ, this is fucking 1992 all over again. Because it was like, they weren't the overalls. They were kind of like the overalls that kind of went like, up in the middle, like the back. I don't know. Like I can't describe.
What
the,
are
the,
you
the,
describing?
Like, how were they different from regular overalls?
Did she have one shoulder unbuckled, like
were
a like an around the way
I
girl?
I don't think we've reached that point yet. We haven't reached like the B-boy style. No, like maybe they weren't even. It was just like a. I didn't see the front. I just saw the back. Like it had because it had like this thing in the back that I don't know. Maybe they were just regular overalls.
Did you say to her as she walked away?
Was
she's
it
like,
more like a romper sort of situation?
No, the top was like it
yeah,
had
but
like
no,
a
but yeah, but no, but yeah, but no.
Yeah,
did
but
you say
no.
to her as she walked away? Did you go, I hate to see you leave, but I'd love to watch you go.
I didn't. Oh, weirdly,
okay. That no, you saying
weird.
That
like,
would have been the weird part.
Like I don't know.
Did
it almost
it
makes me
around?
Angry because I think when I see it, I'm like, we went through this already. Okay, it wasn't a good idea then. Let's not do this. People will be embarrassed of it.
But this is what happens because you know when I
this
was
is like the first time though. Like
hypercolor.
This is the first time I've seen the cycle go full.
Oh, I can't wait till that comes back.
Well, yeah, but you know you got to think about it. Like when I was in high school, I remember going through my dad's stuff from when he was like 18 to 25 and pulling out like jackets and shirts and stuff because it was suddenly cool again. And I remember how horrified my dad was. Like, please don't do this.
It's so
like,
weird.
This is such a terrible idea, and you're going to regret it. And I mean, I do now because there was like a lot of polyester in the 90s that like
which
I could have gone
oh my
without.
God.
So
it's so hot.
Hot.
So hot. That's the worst thing about it.
Not in that way.
It looks good.
No, does it?
It does. I like that because, retro
like, the,
style.
That, like sort of like shine. Like
I like the retro
shiny.
Style. It just it feels so bad that
see,
I don't
like,
care.
I went through this whole like I was doing this. I would go to all the thrift stores and I was getting like 70s pantsuits and that was like my jam. I was like this is going to be my thing. Is I'm going to be the girl who has pantsuits.
And as Brian 70s. Would say, smelled then.
I mean, like,
oh, God.
That's all he imagines.
No, because that was also in the days of CK1. So like I smelled great. Thank you.
I smelled like CK1.
I smelled like CK1 in the 70s, so it was like a good mix of things.
I don't think it smells bad even today, but I would never wear it. It's not an unpleasant scent.
Wait, what? The 70s or CK1?
CK1. No, the 70s, I don't know what they smell like. But
Brian. I do. They were horrible.
Is there a Wes Craven film outside of the ones we've done that you would recommend if you watch? Maybe one that you haven't. That you think other people would not, you know, something.
I would say
obviously I have. Obviously, I'm trying to lead this somewhere. I mean,
what would you say? About
the music?
No, I want to hear yours.
Jetam Paris?
No.
How about Music of the Heart?
No, still not that either. But just things that are off the beaten path, somewhat older or something like that.
I mean, I'm always going to say if you want to, I would say watch. I'm going to say watch Last House on the Left and Nightmare on Elm Street and New
but
Nightmare.
That's what I'm saying. But those are the ones. I mean, and I get that, and I'm not knocking those. Those are the top three choices. Those are there to say. That's what I'm saying. That is there something you know digging?
Deadly Blessing.
Is there something? All right, I like that. Deadly Blessing. Good.
Yeah. Deadly Blessing.
I agree.
I would say Red Eye.
I think Red Eye is absolutely fantastic. Red Eye is, I think, his best film. The last great film he made. Like, it was Scream and Scream 2, and then he kind of falls off, honestly. I thought Red Eye was fantastic.
And, you know, I'd even go, I mean, I don't know if many people know he did Swamp Thing.
Yeah, that's no,
Swamp
a good
Thing's
call.
A good one, too.
It's more of a Carpenter movie than a Craven movie.
Yeah, especially with Adrian Barbeau.
That's why I think that.
He didn't direct this, but he wrote it, and I like the Hills Have Eyes 2 remake.
Oh,
like the
okay.
sequel to the remake.
It's I like the remake.
I like the remake too, but he had nothing. He was just producing that. He actually wrote Hills Have Eyes too. He and his son Jonathan. And so
Jonathan Taylor Craven.
Jonathan Taylor Craven, yeah.
Craven Moorhead.
And then I've always, I mean, as I've already mentioned, if you haven't seen Deadly Friend, holy shit, go watch it. Dude gets his head knocked off with a basketball that's thrown by a robotic Christy Swanson. Holy shit, it's so good.
Some would say that Christy Swanson, God. That was the part she was born to play, a robot.
Or a vampire slayer.
I think she was awesome in Buffy.
Yeah.
I think
she's
she was awesome.
Not
I think she was awesome in that movie with Charlie Sheen where she
The Chase?
Yeah, oh God.
I love The Chase. I thought that movie was awesome.
Or Wait,
was
or,
that her? Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, that was her. And then she got naked in Playboy, and I was all right with that.
I'm. It's sad that he's not here. There's some great films you got there. I mean, yeah,
there's no recourse other than to say that it like it's just a horrible thing. I mean, especially the like brain cancer is apparently a really bad way to go. And
yeah, it seems that he didn't know it. I mean, he'd been tweeting. Fairly recently.
It's quickly. I mean, like, when my aunt died of it, and she found out, and it was only a few months later that she passed. Like, it moves in quickly. Yeah.
My grandfather, that happened to him, too. He got a tumor and had it removed, and then I think it was probably... He existed like a kind of a vegetative state for a few months, and then finally got a cold that he couldn't... You know, his immune system couldn't fight.
Jeez.
Passed away, too. So, yeah, it's a... Hopefully it wasn't a painful thing. Hopefully it was a...
Went quickly. Like, the thing we can all hang our hat on here, though, is that... I mean, his movies, like, it's the most cliche thing you can say, but, I mean, his movies will live on. Like, I mean, he is inspired. I mean, it's been Wes Craven news everywhere for the last few days. I mean, it just goes to show how much people love about Wes Craven.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just an amazing filmmaker and apparently like just an amazingly kind and generous person too.
I was saying that like I haven't watched as many movies of his today even as I did. There are so many actors who if they show up once, they show up again. And I think that's a statement too. They really everything I've ever read about him is that he was just a just a nice guy. And they just really liked him. And if he came and asked him to be in something again, they're like, yeah, let's do it.
I'm craving to do more parts with you.
I would also say that, like, as just sort of an aside that Never Sleep Again's a really great documentary about the series, and it there are some really great interviews with Wes Craven in that documentary.
Yeah.
I would say watch the hits and then go trace, find your, 10 years from now some kid is trying to catch up on classic horror, then I would say watch the hits, then go back and dig deeper.
But I love
if you're a teen, like, I think a lot of, I mean, if any teenagers are listening, I mean, I would say, yeah, definitely go back and watch The Last House on the Left and Hills Have Eyes.
And, make sure you wash your face at night.
And sadly enough, Scream. Because you're talking about classic horror.
It's 20 years old at this point.
Well, Nightmare on Elm Street's 31 years old.
I know. It's like, and those are the big two. If you haven't seen Nightmare and Scream,
if you haven't seen Nightmare on Elm Street, you probably should just stop listening
doing yourself
to us.
You were doing yourself a disservice. Go and watch
listen to our episode about Nightmare on Elm Street.
Exactly.
And
maybe
Blessing.
We should do one on Scream because it's just fun.
I think that's got to come up this Halloween.
I think so too. Yeah. We have the other. We'll have another big
Scream
four.
Scream 2 so much.
I think we got to do Scream, Hellraiser.
I love Scream 2 so much.
Maybe Shaun of the
Both. We could just do Scream and Scream 2.
Return of the Living Dead, which I keep wanting to do.
Yeah, let's do Return of the Living Dead for Halloween this year.
Maybe what's not Pumpkinhead, but what's the other big?
I like Pumpkinhead.
I love Pumpkinhead, but there's another
Gourdhead, Baghead.
We can almost do like Child's Play.
Oh, that's my favorite.
Yeah, let's do that. We can do that.
I want Noah to watch Child's
Play. I want to do Child's Play 3. Is that the one the military school?
I think that's 2.
It's 2 the military school, and 3 is the
No, that's Problem Child.
And there is that too.
God,
how did they not blend those two together at some point?
Yeah, right.
Holy crap.
Problem Child's Play.
Oh my gosh.
Don't steal it, guys. Don't steal it, Hollywood.
Or do and make it, because I'm not.
Be
I can't.
I mean, seed of
you
Chucky.
You guys want me to make that on my iPhone? Because I could
do
I
it.
Just film Noah for like a few hours after school.
We'll do it
with a Chucky doll.
No, him.
Oh, okay.
He is a problem child.
I put him as problem.
He's
child.
He's not a problem.
Well,
child.
So he's Chucky.
No, I meant like.
Which is he? Now, if you're
we'll agree
this.
To disagree. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. R.I.P. in peace, Wes Craven.
Wesley Earl Craven.
Wesley Earl Craven Moorhead. R.I.P. in peace.
It's not his name.
Good night. I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
I'm Drew.
I'm Lona.
I said that like I was like, I am supposed to do that.
Yeah, you are.
Hey, I'm Brian.
I'm
Good
Tyler.
Night. Fuck off.
Great episode, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was better than just doing. I liked the way we did it. I thought that was.
I think maybe we could do that more often.
Let's hope someone else dies.
Yeah.
But I think it's better than just trying to pick one movie or just trying to talk about his whole career. I think it was a pretty fun way to do it.
That whole an oeuvre of any.
Because it gave us. We get to pick. I mean, we had reasons for why we chose what we chose. It was just fun.
I think we could do that, instead of picking a classic movie every once in a while. Like, I know that during Halloween we do that, but every once in a while, maybe we should just pick a filmmaker, go through sort of like the interesting but maybe flawed parts of the career and talk about those. Because like we largely avoided talking about Nightmare and
maybe
Scream.
we can also do that with a book. Then maybe that's the easier way to go with about books and stuff too. Is pick an author and go over their work
like instead
Stephen
of trying King, to. If we're gonna do like a Stephen King,
yeah, that's gonna have to be a 2-hour episode.
I think we've talked a lot about Nightmares. I get why you didn't talk about that, Sam. I think we could talk about Scream at this point. I think we're far enough away from. I think that's still my problem. Is I still think it's like 5 years old.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and I'm like, too. We can't talk about. That's too new. It's like let's
We should definitely do it for the. I mean, Halloween starts in a month, so we can do our 4 episodes of Halloween.
I think
stuff.
That's a good 4. I think Hellraiser, Child's Play, Scream, and
Return of the Living Dead.
Return of the Living Dead. Yeah, I think those are 4 good ones.
Does George want to join us?
Yeah. Yes.
He just showed up.
Oh, I thought you were asking. Like,
no. Sorry, no.
Can we podcast with your kid? Yeah.
No,
I mean,
he's not ready.
Get him started.
We'll have 3 kids in the next podcast. It'll be. Jackson, Noah, and then a bunch of gurgles.
All right. I'm going to go eat pizza, guys.
Hey,
oh, we had
pizza.
Hey! We always have pizza on Wednesdays.
Is it... did you order it?
It's not delivery or DiGiorno. It's Tombstone. Okay. All right, guys. All right. See you later.
Bye.
Okay. Hey, can we just stay on and talk?
Hey, what are you guys doing tonight?
No, I liked that. I thought it was a really cool way to do it. Yeah. And I was not trying to rag on your choice at all. I love the choice that you made. It was all part of the show.
You're talking to me or Mona?
No, Mona.
It's all part of the show. Oh, it's fine. It's fine.
Everything we
do. Now, I will admit, my first reaction, though, when like, because I was like, I picked shot.
No.
And my big one, and when you said that, I was like, she picked one of the big ones.
No, well, I tell you why I did it. So I was cleaning out all of my closets last weekend. And I bought it on Blu-ray, like, at some point year, like in the past 2 years since I've been in the house, and it was still in its wrapper, and I had no clue that I even owned it. I was like, fuck, I have got to watch this. I was like, I've got to stop buying things, first off. I was like, also, I need to watch this. So I was like, oh, this is perfect. He died.
Yeah,
I should watch it.
Yeah, no, that was a totally good one.
At least one of us watched something decent. That's all I'm saying.
I think I defended Shocker, even though it was flawed.
Shocker is fun.
It's
for
fun.
What it is.
That's the problem with. Fuck. That's the problem with people in the series. It's not fun. God.
I'm shocked that you'd say that.
And the same thing with Serpent the Red. And that's still the thing. Like I said, they're just boring. They're just boring. They're not bad movies, but they're boring.
Yeah.
That one's fun.